Okay, so I did say we were thinking about following Jesus this morning, and that is true, but actually the word I want you to focus on for a moment is selection. Selection. Last time I spoke, we did rejection, and this time we're going to do selection. So I wondered if we could just run through our hand signs from the beginning of the New Testament. And so we go Greece, language, Israel, hopes, Rome, roads, birth, baptized by John, tempted by Satan. What comes next? Second birth, woman at the well, rejection, selection. Thank you for that help back there. And Brian, wondered if you could come and give us a reading. We're looking at John chapter 1, verses 35 to 51 to begin with. Yes, thank you.
The next day, again, John, that is John the Baptist, was standing with two of his disciples, and he looked at Jesus as he walked by and said, "Behold, the Lamb of God." The two disciples heard him say this, and they followed Jesus. Jesus turned and saw them following and said to them, "What are you seeking?" And they said to him, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" He said to them, "Come and you will see." So they came and saw where he was staying, and they stayed with him that day, for it was about the 10th hour. One of the two who heard John speak and followed Jesus was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He first found his own brother, Simon, and said to him, "We have found the Messiah," which means Christ. He brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, the son of John. You shall be called Cephas," which means Peter. The next day, Jesus decided to go to Galilee. He found Philip and said to him, "Follow me." Now Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." Nathanael said to him, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Philip said to him, "Come and see." Jesus saw Nathanael coming towards him and said of him, "Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom there is no deceit." Nathanael said to him, "How do you know me?" Jesus answered him, "Before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you." Nathanael answered him, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Jesus answered him, "Because I said to you, I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You'll see greater things than these." And he said to him, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man."
Thank you very much, Brian. Okay, so there's loads of names there. Now, if you're anything like me, I get quickly confused with a whole load of names, and it's not great for me. But that's my poor little brain. I'm sure you can do better. But I just want you to cast your mind back to maybe school days or those sort of times and thinking about selection, you know. And the sports teacher might have come up and said, "Look, two captains, everybody else stand against the wall." And then you have to be selected by the captain. So I wondered if we could just sort of do a bit of, I need two captains. Any volunteers, Aaron? Anybody else like to volunteer? We need a captain. Do you want to come, Mo? You come and be a team captain? That'd be good. And we're not going to play football now. We're going to have a quiz. All right, so don't pick me, for goodness sake, because you will come last. So we're going to pick sides now. So do you want to go first? Who would you like to be on your side?
Andrew,
good man. What, he looks all right for the job, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Andrew can be on your side. Aaron, do you want to?
Bruce.
So why did you pick Bruce?
It's obviously quite an intelligent chap. Yeah.
Good choice, yeah. Who are you going to go for next, Mo?
Sandra.
Oh, another good one there, yeah. You know who to choose, don't you?
Yeah.
Aaron, do you want to have him?
Barry.
Okay, so we're not going to go any further. Because it can get embarrassing, can't it? I don't know about you, but if you were the last one stood against that wall, you know, the captain would have said, okay, come on, you can be on my side if you must. Just go and stand over there out of the way so you won't get in the way. And, you know, you wouldn't have felt good, would you? But Jesus wasn't like that. Jesus was the opposite. In fact, he said in Matthew, he said, should we just all say this together? Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. So, Jesus is not going to be choosing like we would choose. But thank you very much for coming to help me, Mo, and you, Aaron. That's very good. So, I don't know how close to your heart that felt, you know, whether that brought back bad memories or not. But Jesus is not like that, which is the whole point. And Jesus wants everybody to come, and not only the weary and the burdened, but he wants us all to come, and he will give us rest. Interestingly, when God asked Samuel to choose a king back in the Old Testament days, Samuel was looking at these big guys and they're thinking, oh, he'd make a good king. And then God said, no, his brother's similar. So he'd make a good king. He's a handsome bloke, big and strong. But God said, no, I look on the inside, whereas you look on the outside. And they had to go all down through the brothers of the family of Jesse, and until they got to David, the young one who was out in the fields. And God said, yeah, that's the man I want. And so we need to be realizing that Jesus was different. When he picked his disciples, he didn't go out and he picked the most intelligent, the most brightest, the best at football or whatever it was. He chose them for other reasons. And I just want to run through the disciples and say a little bit about what we know about them. So hopefully you can learn a bit and just, but be thinking, you know, do I think myself a bit like one of these guys? You know, have I got some of those character traits that they may have? Because we can identify with them if we do. So we start with Peter and Andrew. They're brothers, fishermen by trade. They were from Bethsaida. But they later lived in Capernaum. And their father was called John, another John, not John the Baptist. But we have some common names of that time, and there's lots of them used, so we sometimes struggle. So let's look at Simon Peter, usually just called Peter, but also known as Simon Peter, Cephas, just Simon, son of John, brother of Andrew. You know, it's all a confusion. It's just one guy. But Peter was quick to talk. If you needed an opinion, you could ask Peter and you knew where you were. Peter was a natural leader, a bit of a spokesman for the 12 disciples. And Peter's name is mentioned most in the New Testament, most of all the other disciples. Peter is very famous for walking on water, but also for denying Jesus 3 times after Jesus has been arrested. So he had some real highs, but he also had some real low points in his life. And he died a martyr's death in Rome during the reign of Nero, possibly the same time roughly as when Paul was beheaded too. And so Peter wrote the books in the New Testament, 2 books, 1 Peter and 2 Peter. And then his brother Andrew, well, he was introduced to Jesus. Andrew was one of John the Baptist's disciples, and he introduced his brother Peter to Jesus. And so Andrew was following John the Baptist, so he was already keyed into Old Testament prophecies and looking forward to the Messiah. And then John the Baptist pointed him out very clearly, and he said, basically, there's your man you need to be following. And so Andrew came over and followed Jesus instead of John the Baptist. Follow the top man is always a good motto, isn't it? And Andrew did that on that occasion. And like his brother Peter, he was also crucified for his faith. Then there's 2 other brothers, James and John. They're also in the fishing business and would have known Simon and Peter and what's his name, Andrew. And their father was called Zebedee. Possibly quite well off because we know they used to hire men to go swimming, fishing. Oh, I said swimming. So possibly quite well off. But James and John were known for being quite fiery because Jesus nicknamed them sons of thunder. So whether that was inherited from their father Zebedee or whether that was just them, I'm not sure. But sons of thunder. So imagine talking to them, you know, you might get a bit of a sharp reply. You never know. But let's look at James in particular. And James wanted a place of honour next to Jesus at one time. He said, you know, my brother could sit on the other side and I could sit this side and we would be in the places of honour. You know, the most important people. And it seems that James had a fairly high opinion of himself. But there was he was one of Jesus' three closest followers, friends. And James was there when Peter and John, along with Peter and John, when Jesus raised Jairus' daughter from the dead. And he witnessed Jesus' transfiguration on the Mount of Olives as well. And he was also at the Garden of Gethsemane with Jesus. But Herod had James beheaded. And just to say, it's not the same James who wrote the New Testament book near the end of the Bible. So his brother John was also one of Jesus' closest friends. He'd also been one of John the Baptist's disciples. And towards later in his life, he was sent to exile on the Isle of Patmos. And he wrote the Gospel of John. He wrote John 1, 2 and 3 and also the book of Revelation. So he was a good writer. And then after the emperor's death that sent him exiled John, he came back to Ephesus to lead the churches until he died. So that takes us to Philip. Philip was from Bethsaida. He recognized who Jesus was. He said, you're the one who Moses and the prophets spoke about. So that was a good insight that Philip had. But it's not the same Philip as you read about in the book of Acts, who goes off and sees the Ethiopian eunuch. But he was... one of the things we know that he brought his friend Nathanael to Jesus. But Philip also questioned the logistics of feeding a crowd of 5,000 people with one boy's packed lunch. You know, how are you going to do this, Jesus? This don't make sense. So he missed the big picture of Jesus at that moment. But even so, Philip was sought out and he's called and he was chosen by Jesus to be a follower of him. So, you know, we can not get big moments in our minds. You know, we can just not see things. But God still cares for us. He still wants us. He still loves us. So that takes us to Nathanael. Nathanael's also known as Bartholomew, just to tidy up the mind. He's brought to Jesus by his friend and fellow disciple, Philip. Nathanael came from Canaan in Galilee. And Jesus recognized his sincerity and love for God right at the beginning, and because Jesus said, here is a genuine son of Israel, a man of complete integrity. I mean, what a thing to have said to you by Jesus. That's incredible, isn't it? Then there's Matthew. Matthew is also called Levi, and Matthew was the son of Alphaeus. Matthew was a tax collector among the most despised in Israel, like a traitor. Because he was collecting money from the Jewish people and giving it to the Romans, also collecting a good bit for himself, no doubt, as he was allowed to do, just to make sure it happened. So he was a real traitor. Nobody would like this guy. But Jesus said to him, follow me. And straight away, Matthew got up, left his tax business and followed Jesus. He also wrote the Gospel of Matthew. Simon the Zealot. Bit of a social outcast, a Jewish nationalist, a political activist who wanted to overthrow the Roman rulers. Why would Jesus choose somebody like this, you know, with his background and all that he's getting into?
Well, perhaps Jesus wanted that fiery, loyal, passionate character, courageous, full of zeal, and he wanted to direct that into where it should be going, into talking about Jesus. And so Jesus chose Simon the Zealot. Well, then there's Thomas. Thomas, called Didymus, meaning the twin. And when Lazarus had died and his disciples, Jesus' disciples, feared for their lives and were advising Jesus not to go back to Bethany because he might well get killed, Thomas spoke up saying, no, let's go and let's die with Jesus, displaying his courage. He was saying, yes, this is going to be a difficult situation, but let's just do it, guys. Let's go down there and we'd die with him if necessary. And so here we see that courage, that loyalty that he had for Jesus. And yet we know Thomas often is doubting Thomas because he seemed to need this first-hand proof of Jesus' resurrection. And you know, we can often be in that situation, can't we? Is this really true? Can you really believe this bit of the Bible? Well, I believe we can believe the whole of the Bible. And then there's Thaddeus. Thaddeus, we don't know much about Thaddeus, but he did ask Jesus a question. He said, why are you going to reveal yourself only to us and not to the world at large? And Jesus responded by saying he would reveal himself to anybody who loved him. So it's not just certain people that Jesus wants to reveal himself. He wants to reveal himself to us all who love him. And then we have James. So we have another disciple called James. There's two of them. It's always confusing, isn't it, when there's two or three people with the same name in the same building. And it's what, like people shouting out, Dad, to you, and you always look round, don't you? And there's half the people are looking round, probably. But James is another disciple. We don't know much about him, only a few family members. But maybe this is why it's referred to as James the Younger. Although James was in the background, he was trained and used by Jesus in a powerful way to further the kingdom of God. He was a valuable team member. And then we get to Judas Iscariot. Judas later betrayed Jesus. He had his hand in a money bag. He was a treasurer, but he would take money for himself. So he was a thief. Now, I said earlier that God sees on the inside. We only see the outside. If Jesus is God, why did he choose Judas? You know, there's that question there, isn't there? Well, obviously, Jesus had a purpose for him that he wanted to make happen. And so Judas was chosen. Jesus knew that he would be betrayed and that death was part of the great plan of salvation. And if Judas had not been a willing traitor, then somebody else would have been. And it would seem reasonable to think that Judas had a choice. I believe Judas did have a choice. We all have choices to make. Are we going to stand up for Jesus? Decide for him or go against him and pay the consequences. So it's a sobering thought, isn't it, you know, that we can so easily get things wrong, badly wrong, as Judas did. So that's gone through our whole list there. And then we've got this little chart that I think we have to thank Andrew Rome for, just to show us some of the relationships with Jesus there in the middle of the family tree. We've got James and John were Jesus' cousin. And also James the Younger was Jesus' cousin. So it's just a kind of interesting little thought that Jesus was choosing these people who were probably close family members to him as well. Yeah, thank you. But what about ourselves? Some of those disciples we know very little about. You know, we just know their name. And perhaps like them, you know, we'll never be known beyond our family and friends, beyond those people we bump into every now and again. So no fame and fortune, but we can still serve Jesus and make an impact where we are, I believe. The greatest thing we say about Andrew is that he left everything to follow Jesus, and he introduced his brother too. Key things, he followed and then he brought others along. Let's be like that, decisively following Jesus and introducing Jesus to our family and our friends and all we meet and we bump into. Okay, so I wonder really, why did Jesus choose 12 disciples? Anybody got any ideas? Fairly basic and simple, what I've thought of, so you're probably well ahead of me. 12 tribes, yeah. It would seem 12 would be this sort of number that God was wanting to use to govern Israel. And interesting, after Judas's death, Judas Iscariot, the disciples, they read in Psalms 109 verse 8, let somebody else take his place. And so they were wanting to get this number back up to 12 again. And so they chose another disciple to replace Judas. So it seemed to be important that they had 12. And we can kind of think, well, you know, what's the difference? But it seemed to be the way it needed to be done. And then we could say, well, you know, are these disciples or are they apostles? You know, we throw these words around, don't we? You know, what's the difference? Well, I think disciple means one who follows, and apostle, tell me? One who is sent. Thank you. One who follows and one who is sent. So it's kind of a different purpose there, it would seem. Now, if you're into social media is full, I understand, because I'm not into it, of people following other people. And the more followers you have, the more money you can make on your channel because of advertising. You've just got this group of people who can be advertised to. And the whole idea is if you wear a tie with sheep on, then everybody will want to wear a tie with sheep on. You know, I've seen it happen in this congregation, I'm sure. But, you know, that's the effect and that's how they get their money. And they're called followers, aren't they? You have influencers and followers and all this sort of thing. Well, back in Jesus' day, people literally followed Jesus. You know, they stopped what they were doing. Matthew was a tax collector. He stopped what he was doing and he followed Jesus. He got up and he went after him. There was no other way to do it back then. And that is what a disciple did. He went and he followed his leader. And he would have been wanting to copy his example. He would have gone as all the places he could go with him to know how he reacted in all the situations so that he could learn to be like his leader. And so a disciple, that's what a disciple did back then. And so ourselves, you know, if we want to be disciples of Jesus, we want to be followers of Jesus, we need to get all the info we can about Jesus and keep following his example. And that's why Jesus, who as God, became a man. So that we find it easier to identify with him. And he said he was tempted like we're tempted. He said he was, and we could, you know, see how Jesus reacted. And so we know that Jesus would have submitted to God. He resisted the devil. And that situation would have been dealt with. And so it's so wonderful that Jesus was willing to become a human being so that we could see more closely how to live our lives here on earth. Jesus had plenty of other followers. It wasn't just his 12 that he had. There was lots of followers. There's talk in one part in Luke about 72 people going out, presumably becoming apostles because they were sent out. But they had to be there as disciples, as followers in the first instance. And so we call the disciples, they're disciples to start with, and they change their name to apostles, basically, because they're sent out with the Holy Spirit. Especially we see that at Pentecost. So the question we need to ask ourselves is, who are we following? Don't worry about sheep ties. Not worth thinking about. Have you heard Jesus calling you to follow him? Because this is the most important thing, isn't it? Who are we following? A couple memory verses we've got coming on the screen. Should we just say this together? Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and eat with him and he with me. Revelation 3:20. So Jesus is standing at the door and knocking, saying, come. I want to come and eat with you. I want to
I want you to be my follower. And another verse, again, everybody. If we confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from dead, you will be saved. Romans 10, verse 9. So some certainty there. We want to follow Jesus. We will be saved when we confess with our mouth and believe in our heart. And we do that 24/7, not just on a Sunday, obviously. So do these verses ring true to our heart? Is Jesus calling each one of us? Jesus is calling each one of us to believe wholeheartedly. 24/7, not just a Sunday thing. But what does it cost? You know, if somebody's trying to get me to be keen on something, I'm always interested. What's the cost? Well, there is a cost to following Jesus. We can read about it in Matthew 16, 24 to 26. I wondered if somebody could read this.
Then Jesus said to his disciples, "If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross, and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul? Is anything worth more than your soul?"
Thank you, Angela. So there is a cost in following Jesus. And a few years ago, there was a person came here quite regularly to chapel. And in one week, the preacher said that we need to forgive others as God has forgiven us. And that person had had a difficult past, and it seemed they weren't willing to forgive those who had wronged them. And so they realized that the price was too high for them. They couldn't, they weren't willing to pay that price. And so they stopped coming to chapel. Really incredibly sad. Very honest, I have to say as well, but really, really sad that the person had that difficulty and wasn't willing to pay the cost. There is a cost. We have to give up our own way, of looking at life. You know, that we're okay. It's everybody else which is the problem. And, you know, we have to take up a cross and follow Jesus. A cross being a place of sacrifice. We have to sacrifice our own desires, our own wants, our own needs in order to put Jesus in pole position. And so I want to follow Jesus rather than my own way. There, that is quite a cost that we have to bear. And so I just want to remind us of our how far we've got through. We've got to selection today. And so let's just do our hand signs once more. So we do Greece, language, Israel, hopes, Rome, roads, birth, baptized by John, tempted by Satan, second birth, woman at the well, rejection, selection. Jesus wants us. He loves us. He wants us to follow him. Let's keep that in our minds all the time. Okay, so if we could have another reading, please. And I wonder if somebody could just read this. And it's kind of linked with what we've been saying, but leading up to our communion time. Thank you, Bruce.
When it was evening, Jesus sat down at the table with the 12. While they were eating, he said, "I tell you the truth, one of you will betray me." Greatly distressed, each one asked in turn, "Am I the one, Lord?" He replied, "One of you who's just eaten from this bowl with me will betray me. For the Son of Man must die, as the scriptures declared long ago. But how terrible it will be for the one who betrays him. It would be far better for that man if he had never been born." Judas, the one who would betray him, also asked, "Rabbi, am I the one?" And Jesus told him, "You have said it."
Thank you, Bruce. And so, Jesus has chosen Judas
to be a follower of him. And Judas has followed him 3 years and gone through all those things and knows what's going on. And at this moment, Jesus is focused in. He knows what Judas is going to do. He knows he's going to betray him. He knows he's going to be put to death soon. And yet Jesus still loves Judas. He doesn't leave him and lose, you know, tell him he's a waste of space. And that he knew it all along. Jesus is so compassionate to Judas right now, this very precious moment in his life. And so I just wanted us to notice that Jesus still had love for Judas, and it would seem that Judas still had a choice of what happened and what he could do. And so if we just read on in that passage, verse 26 of Matthew 26, it says, as they were eating, Jesus took some bread and blessed it.